There is a government, but what is the rest of the nation? Grains of sand. We have not established the republic, and will not have done so, unless we manage to set down some masses of granite on the soil of France. Much of the granite set down between 1799 and 1804 still remains in place more than two centuries later. It is an open question whether it has truly benefited France or, instead, helped create what Alexis de Tocqueville, with Napoleon very much in mind, called soft despotism. An immense tutelary power, which assumes sole responsibility for securing men's pleasure and watching over their fate. The achievement was, nonetheless, remarkable, given Napoleon's youth and the fact that his principal executive experience had come from setting up satellite and colonial regimes in conquered territory while simultaneously directing major military operations. Yet he had a great deal working in his favor. By the fall of 1799, the French had lived through a solid decade of revolutionary turmoil, large-scale internecine violence with a total death toll of more than 300,000, a change of regime nearly every year, repeated bouts of hyperinflation and near-economic collapse, threats of foreign invasion. Especially for people with property, security and order had become by far the leading political priorities. The Directory had already gone a long way toward transforming France into a security state, but it had not brought political stability. Napoleon now promised to do so. He also had a political vision that suited the moment of exhaustion. Despite his Egyptian dreams, he was at this stage of his career an intensely practical man. He had little patience for the utopian visions of the radical revolutionaries who had believed they could remake human nature itself. He mistrusted the very notion of political liberty, which in his view produced the kind of wild, dangerous political lurches that threatened the country's very survival. He considered himself a man of the revolution, but what he admired in the revolution was its hostility to undeserved social privilege, to intolerance and superstition, and to sloth and inefficiency, disguised as tradition. He valued the revolution's commitment to the rule of reason and to forms of civic equality that would allow men of talent to raise themselves in society. And, like all but the most radical revolutionaries, he believed firmly in the importance of property and social stability. His brother, Lucien, in his anonymous pamphlet supporting the new regime, praised the class that property, learning, duty, or interest call most insistently to the defense of the common weal, and claimed that Napoleon had rallied this class against a deranged multitude. Napoleon could also call on a talented cadre of men who shared and deepened his vision. Near the top of the government was, most important, Jean-Jacques Cambaceres, a portly ex-Jacobin lawyer from Montpellier, capable of spending hundreds of thousands of francs a year on his principal passions, food and wine. After Napoleon's new constitution came into effect, Cambaceres took on the important, if subservient, role of second consul to Napoleon's first, and oversaw most of the period's domestic reforms. Further from the seat of power, but still important, were a group of revolutionary intellectuals called the ideologues. They, in fact, invented the word, along with ideology, which they defined as the science of ideas. They believed that a proper understanding of how the mind worked would allow them to instill rational beliefs and cooperative behavior in the general population, thereby eliminating political strife and perhaps even the need for political competition. They had helped found the Learned Institute that Napoleon had eagerly joined a few years before. John Adams, among others, mocked their program, writing about ideology. What does it mean? Does it mean idiotism? The science of non-compos menticism? The science of lunacy? But Napoleon took the concept seriously and made the leading ideologue, Antoine Destut de Tracy, a member of his elite state. Napoleon could not hope to translate his ideas into granite-like institutions and practices, however, without first securing France against its foreign enemies and himself against his domestic ones.